Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Prison Justice Show. As usual, I'm your host, Sam Notla. Last time, I talked a bit about being careful with who we consider to be heroes during a crisis. We talked about how in such times, people tend to fall into a, quote, rally around the flag effect, where approval ratings of leaders skyrocket despite no actual action on their own part. This is because people kind of just look for a leader during a crisis, and they'll kind of just take whatever they get. Usually, the people that are propped up by the media aren't as heroic as they seem, and people in power, you know, generally the same people as those who are propped up by the media, use such times to pass increasingly evil laws and/or to consolidate power on their own part. These are also the times where vulnerable groups see great encroachment on their rights, you know, groups such as prisoners, who've been an afterthought, except for, you know, when they could be used for political gain. Staying focused on the prison justice side of things, I used a few examples last time, such as the biased framing of Andrew Cuomo as a hero during this crisis, despite the regressive prison laws and provisions he pushed and passed during the time of crisis, like the rollback of bail reform laws in New York, which I think happened about a week and a half ago at this point, and the exploitation of prisoners during his hand sanitizer stunt. We also took a look at William Barr and how his decision to release prisoners was a step forward, but it wasn't nearly forward enough. And I made the point that we shouldn't really praise him for doing the bare minimum. We should also look at how his implementation of this policy showed a stark contrast to the seemingly progressive nature of it, which is a reason to withhold any praise and to keep fighting against regressive movements and people, even when they seem to concede some small ground. And just to explain that a bit, what I meant was, on its face, he was kind of saying, we should release the elderly, the immunocompromised from prisons. But if you look at the specific text of his memo, he was only really calling out a few general, a few specific jails, instead of saying, like, oh no, everyone should follow this guideline. He also, I don't think he gave, like, really strong guidance to, like, let many elderly and immunocompromised out. It was just kind of like a general wishy-washy one. Basically, it was just one that seemed to be more forced by the situation and not by any change in his own stance or anything. It's kind of like just there to placate activists. And again, it's definitely a great, like, it's still a good move forward. I'm just saying this to make sure that people still stay vigilant about someone who has regressive prison policies to begin with. Finally, we concluded with an argument on why we shouldn't feel obliged or obligated to praise such small concessions in general, because if we want progressive movements to go anywhere in general, we should, you know, withhold that praise for a variety of reasons when such small things happen. And we also addressed some counterarguments to that end. As a closing note, I talked a bit about Securus, which is going to be the topic of today's discussion. So, Securus is a major prison telecom company. The other major one is Global Tellink, I think. Together, they make up, I think, 80% of the market for prison telecommunications. So, it's a major telecom company that prisoners go through in order to communicate with their families. It's also the only one that the Illinois Department of Corrections uses, which means that if you're in Illinois, if you're part of IDOC or you're in an IDOC prison, you're using Securus to call people to communicate with your loved ones. Yet unfortunately, as always seems to be the case, the situation is worse than it seems, you know. Because if Securus was just a private company that provided the infrastructure, that would be one thing. You know, if they just built the lines and that's all. Or honestly, whatever telecom companies do. To be honest, I'm not really sure. But the reality is kind of mired more in exploitation, shady dealings, and more. There's a bunch of shady stuff which is actually going to apply to anyone, which not just prisoners, that we'll actually get to near the end real quick. So, you know, it has implications not only for prisoners, but for people who have absolutely nothing to do with the prison system, for example. So with that having been said, let's get into it. So if you're watching an ad for Securus, I mean, I hope you're never really forced to, but let's say you are for some reason, you might be a bit disturbed. With cheery music in the background, their ads feature scores of panels, with each one containing a smiling prisoner and their loved ones on the other end of a video call. But the upbeat ad belies their true nature as a company that preys on and exploits prisoners for their own gain, all the while giving kickbacks to corrections to sweeten the pot for them both. So let's get a bit into why we should care about Securus and what they do in the first place. Well, if you're a prisoner in somewhere under IDOC jurisdiction, they're the only way you can communicate with your family. Even under normal conditions, that's something that's crucial to the mental state and well-being of prisoners. Being connected to the outside world, being able to uphold the lasting connections that you've had over your life, these things keep prisoners from being alienated from the outside world during their rehabilitation. The phenomena of alienation has been well researched and shown to be a huge factor in recidivism, as prisoners who recede, they commit crime, they go back, they reoffend. They've often feel that the world they come out to is alien to them, that they're not meant to be there, so they take actions to return to their previous environment. But it's by creating some sense of belonging that we can set the foundation for the reintegration of prisoners into our society, instead of making them feel alienated, let's make them feel welcome and everything. And perhaps this is a lofty claim to make when talking about something as seemingly simple as phone or video calls, but I think that the very aspect of communication with the people you care about, the one that keeps people tied to their environments, their lives, that's one of, if not the most important thing in order to fight this kind of alienation. But now you have to think about the current situation as well, right? With fear, uncertainty, and death so widespread, communication becomes more important than it has ever been before. Days without talking to a loved one could turn into a lifetime. As we talked about in a previous episode, family members are finding it hard, if not impossible, to find any information on the health of their imprisoned loved ones. And this isn't just for general inquiries, this is if they know that their loved one is in the hospital for some reason or another, at the current time. Prison medical staff have apparently been reported as being unwilling to give any response in multiple places during the current crisis. I think there was an article by the Martial Law Project or something, and they quoted one person who called the prison hospital and was just bounced around from line to line all day long before given some generic voicemail response. So that's kind of the state of people who want to know how their loved ones are doing in prison, even if they're sick. And remember again that this virus spreads like wildfire in prisons. In particular, Cook County Jail is actually the biggest known source of coronavirus infections in the entire United States, as cited from Zach Cheney Rice in The Intelligencer. This isn't a thing that might happen, it's a thing that's already happened and is still happening, So take every important aspect of communication that we talked about and magnify it to a significant degree because all of a sudden everything's become super urgent and important, right? Again, like, not being able to contact your loved ones during a normal period of time is like, you might be able to brush it off without whatever, but in this case, there's a very good reason to believe that something bad might have happened to them. So now, if we accept this premise, that communication is important and crucial to prevent alienation when on the inside, you have to ask then, right, how good are these communication companies and systems whom we're actually trusting to maintain this lifeline? And with Securus, the answer is pretty bad, actually. Let's start off with the cost side of things. So, again, crucial lifeline prevents alienation, all that good stuff. You'd imagine that, therefore, this stuff would be subsidized to some great degree, or, made free, right? Well, as you probably guessed, this isn't the case, despite many studies, numerous ones saying that these are all vital to people's mental health and their rehabilitation. So actually, according to the National Campaign for Prison Phone Justice, abbreviated as the CPPJ, the cost of a 15-minute phone call in Illinois is $1.05. What is considered a good wage for a prisoner in Illinois is $28 a month. That's actually one of the better rates, per a 2018 article in Prison Legal News. And remember that this wage needs to cover all of your expenses, medical payments. The person in Illinois was quoted as saying they had a $5 copay to see a prison doctor. Reading expenses, remember how we talked about how prisoners needed to pay to read free books from a free database, and so on and so forth. They have to pay for things like hygiene products as well. So let's be extremely generous, okay? Let's say that this only takes up half of your income for the month. All of these other costs, they only take up half. Then you just have $14 left over for the month. That means that you can make about 13 15-minute phone calls, 13 phone calls of like an okay length as your lifeline to the outside world for the entire month. And it's not like the infrastructure that allows for this is particularly expensive to uphold either. Actually, we'll get a bit into why these costs are insanely inflated again towards the end. But as the CPPJ says, you know, prisoners are a captive market. You know, they're forced to rely upon what they call, quote, monopolistic predatory operators, which are chosen for them by state agencies. Prisoners don't have another choice if they want to communicate with their loved ones. They don't have an alternative, you know. Remember that Securus is the only provider for IDOC. There's no competition that prisoners can go to, no reason for Securus to really lower their rates, you know, other than things like activist pressure, which has actually had a significant effect. All these like crazy high rates that you keep hearing about, these are actually insanely low compared to what they could be. That's because activists have actually gotten laws passed capping these rates a certain amount. And so, you know, at this point, you're forced to make difficult decisions. You know, if you're a prisoner with this limited income, can I pay for a doctor's visit? Can I pay for hygiene products? Can I pay to read, pay to call, etc., etc.? And more often than not, you know, the answer is no. So the alienation deepens in your state, you know, whatever sacrifice you make it in, whether it's your hygienic state, your general health state, your mental health state, you know, they worsen. But hold on, you might say, isn't it also possible for prisoners to call collect so that they aren't paying, but rather their families are? Well, there are a few problems with that. The first is that the average prisoner, you know, and by extension their families, they're particularly impoverished in comparison to the general population. What this means is that even if their family was paying for the call, you know, this could still be a significant financial burden. And what's worse is that rates for calling collect are often significantly higher than they are for calling debit, debit meaning that the prisoner would pay them. So not only are you putting a burden on your family, but you're actually putting an even bigger one on them than you might expect, given what your own rates are. Actually, according to the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, 1/3 of families of the incarcerated go into debt solely to cover the cost of communicating with their loved ones. You know, it's, again, these aren't like small costs. They might seem like small numbers to some of us, but they're not. Again, 1/3 of families go into debt just to be able to talk to their loved ones on the inside. And, you know, then you have to imagine that these costs begin to affect their relationship, you know, because the implication is in their family's head, you know, that even talking to you, the prisoner, is a burden, one that they may not be able to afford. You know, it's not that they want to think that or anything, but it's the reality of the situation. But again, despite all those things, your family, and they care about you, so they're willing to go into debt to do these things. But, and again, as I said, it'll still have an effect on your relationship. It'll still deteriorate it to some degree. And then, surely, you know, put yourself in the prisoner's shoes, right? If you were an incarcerated person, you'd also feel guilt, right? Knowing that your family had to pay rates that they couldn't afford, that they had to go into debt just in order to spend a few minutes on the line with you. And so perhaps then you choose not to call them, you know, you choose not to communicate, so as not to worsen this burden and potentially hurt your relationship. But doing so, remember that you fall back into the cycle of alienation as you're further removed from your connections to the outside world. Even if you just reduce the amount of time that you talk to them, you know, with all these things in mind, it's still going to have a significant impact on your wellness. You know, it's not like these factors will just go away. Well, then you could also say, why do they need to go through these telecommunication visits at all? Why can't they just see each other in person? Well, let's ignore the logistics of some of this, you know, ignore the family members may not be able to find transportation, live remotely close to their imprisoned relative, etc. Let's hand wave literally all of that for a second, though these aspects alone, again, these should be a huge red flag as to the inaccessibility of communication for many families, especially working class ones. Well, in some jails, Securus actually has contracts stating that in-person visits are banned. That's right, it's not even an option in some jails. In 2016, Maya Shenwar wrote about her experience trying to visit her sister in a Lake County jail. She was told that in-person visits had actually been completely banned, which is apparently a common occurrence when video visitation is introduced. What she was given instead was an option to video visit from her home for $5, which is a price that's just not regularly affordable for many families living paycheck to paycheck, or in person, which meant that she would do the same thing but sitting in a booth in the prison instead, you know, still not face-to-face with their sister. And so it's kind of really weird that you're doing an in-person visit, but you kind of just go to the jail and you sit in a completely different room and you do the same thing on like a tablet or whatever that you'd be doing at home anyways. But yeah, anyways, so that's the situation that she had to go through. And the thing is, in addition to that, she needed to sign up for a specific 30-minute slot 24 hours in advance, which is a scheduling luxury that many do not have as well. Like, imagine if you need to, if you're someone who works, you know, regular shifts that can change from day to day, you know, something like your boss says, oh, you need to come in at this time tomorrow. You know, you don't have that luxury of being, of saying, okay, 24 hours in advance, this is my 30-minute slot to talk to you. You know, and that slot needs to be open and everything. So again, all these are scheduling luxuries that many working-class people don't have, and working-class impoverished people are disproportionately, you know, the family members and, you know, prisoners themselves. So just with that in mind, remember, like, all these amounts are really significant, and all these aspects are as well. But anyways, getting back to the story, even after she paid for this and sat down to have a talk with her sister, she actually found that the connection was so bad, that the service was so shoddy, that she actually spent the entire allotted time with tech support. She was still on with them when her time ran out, and there was nothing she could do. There was no way for her to communicate to her sister that, like, no, I didn't just bail on you, I was here, there's something wrong with the service. But yeah, there's nothing she could do, and what actually happened afterwards is the Securus and their tech support refused to answer any further questions that she had about what happened. Basically, complete radio silence as to whatever happened that first time. She actually tried again, and on her second try, she actually connected. She didn't even connect the first time, by the way. But when she connected the second time, the call was glitchy, the lighting was dim, and the audio was apparently hazy and out of sync. So not only are people being overcharged for the service in general, but the service that's actually being provided is complete garbage to start with, as if to spit in the faces of people that are already on the ground. Well then, you might ask, at this point, you know, why do prisons and jails allow this at all? You've probably already guessed the reason. If not, I spoiled it earlier anyways, but the answer is kickbacks. So according to the CPPJ, up to 94.1% of all revenue from phone calls is turned into kickbacks. This is defined as money added unnecessarily to the cost of each phone call, but far from the only additional fees families pay to stay in contact. So prisons don't really care if these prices are high or exorbitant, because in the end, they're actually the ones that are profiting off of it. Actually, these kickbacks are just some of the main reasons as to why certain service providers are chosen at all. You know, for example, why did IDOC choose Securus over Global Tellink? There are a few states that have limited or eliminated kickbacks, but it has only been in the face of really severe activist pressure. I think when I looked at the link, it was, I think it looked like 7 or 8 states. Illinois actually has one of these. So, for example, they have the phone call prices capped at $1.05 per 15 minutes, or that works out to 7 cents a minute, as we talked about earlier. And Illinois actually has laws that force IDOC to contract with the vendor providing the lowest prices. But even in the face of like these laws and this cap and the fact that IDOC has to choose the cheapest one, even then you get this exorbitant rate. So the exorbitant rate is actually after all this legislation was passed to curb kickbacks. And so there's still a profit incentive to increase the suffering of prisoners for no reason other than personal gain, which is why this stuff continues to happen despite how glaringly unjust the situation is. In some states, activists, I think, have made more ground. If I remember correctly, in California, starting in 2010, they made it so that zero kickbacks were allowed at all. Absolutely none. So the stuff like these call price caps don't completely eliminate kickbacks like the ones that are in Illinois. They just kind of limit them to a certain degree. But as you can probably guess, the trend of how I talk about these things, I guess I'm going to say my favorite words, which is that it gets worse. In 2015, per an Intercept article by Jordan Smith and Michael Lee, Securus was hacked. The hacker believed that Securus was violating the constitutional rights of inmates and decided to prove so. What he found and made public was that Securus had apparently been recording over 70 million phone calls between December 2011 and spring 2014. In there were over 14,000 calls between the incarcerated individual and their attorneys, which is legally protected communication. This 14,000 number is actually apparently a huge underestimate, because it was only for official like 1-800 attorney numbers that they saw. So this doesn't include any calls that they might have made to their attorney's cell phone number, which is probably the majority of calls that you're going to make to your attorney. You're not going to be calling them on their official line every single time. But yeah, this is legally protected communication, and Securus was apparently storing it despite the fact that they don't have any right to do that. The ACLU actually commented on this, going as far as to call it the most massive breach of attorney-client privilege in modern U.S. history. This all, by the way, despite the fact that Securus had apparently lauded themselves on their rigorous standards for security, which is apparently so thorough and rigorous that a single FedUp hacker could get through it given sufficient motivation. So now here's your situation, right? And not only has Securus been recording and storing millions of phone calls for years while violating constitutional rights along the way, but they've done so with such paper-thin security that any one person could get access to them. Remember that this is a hacker that decided to make things public. Like, he did this in the first place because he was fed up with them and wanted to expose what they were doing. You know, it's more of like an activist than you'd think. But imagine if you were someone who did this like with more nefarious intentions. Who knows if they've just been hacked before and it just hadn't been revealed, right? Because this person wanted to reveal this stuff. What if you're someone that just wanted information, confidential information on prisoners? You wouldn't have to, you know, go public with it. You could just take the information and do whatever you wanted with it. And here's another thing, right? We talked about the millions of phone calls that were recorded. These were technically legally recorded. But we should kind of talk about the context as to what's going on. Why are these phone calls being recorded? So prisoners know that they don't have privacy. You know, this is an extremely unfortunate fact, but it's a reality that they unfortunately have to face. It's not one that I like or prefer or would have happened, but it is what it is for now, at least. What this means is that at the beginning of Securus mediated calls, there's a message that says something to the effect of, by the way, this phone calls being recorded for security or something. But it's clearly crossing a line well beyond standard security when these calls are stored for years. The ACLU actually says as much in much better words than I could say, stating that waivers of rights are not meant to be all or nothing. Waivers are meant to be only as extensive as necessary to accomplish the goal underlying the waiver. As the article says, storing these conversations indefinitely doesn't enhance safety on any meaningful level. In fact, it actually constitutes a gross infringement on personal rights as they store your data for years and years, you know, way past the time that the call might have posed any security threat. And while we're at it, let's actually talk about some other fun stuff that they do. So this is the part where we'll talk about how it actually affects all of us. So, Securus apparently also has the ability to obtain and share the cell phone location information of virtually anyone who uses a phone. This is per an ACLU article by Nima Singh Guliani and Nathan Fried Wessler. This means that they can access anyone's location in real time without any safeguards as to what they might use this information for. This info is provided to Securus's government clients, you know, meaning law enforcement. Apparently they used it to track suspects, any people of interest, you know, it's just people of interest in general, so don't get on their bad side, I guess. And according to the article, even Alzheimer's patients. But the problem is, in addition to just the general problems with this kind of mass surveillance and tracking in general, this was actually all done without any warrants, which are usually necessary to allow real-time cell phone tracking. Actually, all that Securus requires from law enforcement is that they check a box online saying that they have permission to look up the location of the phone, and that's it. That's Securus making sure that this is all legal and good. And not only does this have a high potential for abuse, you know, as anyone could tell, but there are actually already huge stories that have been broken on how it has been abused already. In 2014, for example, a Missouri sheriff used it to illegally track a judge and personnel on state highway patrol. And so what this means is that, you know, even you aren't safe from Securus's information. You know, it has nothing to do with whether or not you're in prison. The company is just so fundamentally shady that not only are they doing all these horrible things to prisoners, and they're still around, by the way. Like, that's kind of crazy, right? They're still around, and again, they make up 80% of the market cap along with Global Telling, despite the fact that they were hacked and showed all these constitutional violations, all this stuff. So that's just one thing. But the point is that despite all the shady stuff they do with prisoners, they're also doing the shady stuff with, they could do it with literally anyone. They can track literally anyone. As long as I think you're using like a US cell phone carrier or something like that, because they piggyback off of that system. So all the surveillance that's done to prisoners and their communications, that's all a possibility for you as well. By the way, another fun little tidbit, this location tracking stuff actually has a fee that prisoners are charged for whatever reason. Like, it's just added on there. I think it's like a 4% location tracking fee. That's made because when they call the outside world, again, for whatever reason, Securus is like, oh, we need to track where this call is going to, like the exact pinpoint location of whoever this call is going to or whoever is calling to the prison. And apparently that's like a fee they just throw on there because, you know, whatever gets them more money. But yeah, you know, I could say that at least if they're surveilling you, you know, this is at least legal. But given what we just talked about, Securus doesn't particularly seem to care about that, nor in fact does law enforcement. So activist pressure on this front, I think, should really be appreciated. You know, the people who reveal these things, the people who fight against these gross injustices, those guys are the heroes that we should have been talking about on last episode, you know? Because they're people that just have the same capabilities as any of us, but they're mad at the right people and they care enough to get these things done. Again, it's only through like this massive activist pressure that they were able to lower these rates to the amount that they're at anyways. Which again, as I've said multiple times, are still way too high, but they're much better than they could be. I think again, if I remember correctly, at the time that they were trying to get these laws pushed, limiting the rates for these calls, Securus and Global Telling, these companies meeting these calls, they were all like, oh no, we're gonna go out of business if you do this. All this crazy stuff. It was just obviously not going to happen, but despite all the fact that it's obvious that they were lying about all these things, activists still needed to put up such a huge fight in order to reduce these things to what they were able to in just like what, 7 or 8 states at this point. So again, this is just to say I have a lot of respect for the people who are doing this. Communication with their loved ones is a huge deal as to keeping in touch with society and feeling like you're still, you know, a part of the society despite the fact that you're currently in prison. It's, again, it's like no small feat what they've accomplished. But, you know, having said that, I think I'll leave it there for today. I hope that you learned something today and that you like the show. If you didn't learn something, it's probably more my fault than yours. As always, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to email prisonjusticeshow@gmail.com. You know, be safe, be well, and I'll talk.